Have you ever asked yourself the question, why do men live the lives that they do? Our lives are a compiling of building blocks. That is, building blocks of character. It begins in the home and continues on through our life. In Proverbs, the first chapter, verse 7, the wise man writes, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. For they will be graceful ornament on your head and a chain about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." And again in Proverbs chapter 1, looking down to verse 20, "Wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. She cries out in the chief concourses. At the openings of the gate in the city, she speaks her words. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. Turn at my rebuke. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you, and I will make my words known to you. Because I have called, and you refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no one has regarded." The moral condition of a nation is something that greatly contributes to the building blocks that of character that we're talking about this morning. Pilate, for instance, is an interesting individual. He had little help in building his character. If he had had help, he certainly would have never reached the position that he reached. For instance, let's think about the situation that Pilate was in. What was the Roman society, and in particular, what were Roman officials like during this time period? Well, we notice in Romans chapter 1, verse 28, the Apostle Paul talks about the Gentile world in general. And he says, even though they did not want to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud boasters, inventors of evil things, and disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, and unmerciful. That pretty well describes the way things were. Pretty well describes it. But we know that when a life is not built on principle, it will change with the shifting winds. If it is not firmly established on some principle, it'll go whatever way the wind goes. And, of course, we know that that's the kind of life that Pilate lived. Jesus described two kinds of people in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 through 27. He talks about whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them will be likened to a wise man who builds his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. There we have the firm principle. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them, he will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended and the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell. And great was its fall. We can see how important then a firm foundation is. Paul wanted Christians to build this foundation of inner strength. In Ephesians 4, beginning with verse 14, Paul says that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men in this cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. speaking the truth in love, that you may grow up in all things into Him who is the head, even Christ. Firm footing, firm foundation. Many men, of course, think of themselves as strong and principled, when in fact they are just plain cowards. And there, unfortunately, are many cowards within the Lord's church today. But let's begin with Pilate by looking at his background. Pilate was involved with a very corrupt government. In the ISBE, which is International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, it says the procurator was the personal servant of the emperor, directly responsible to him, and was primarily concerned with finance. He had to please unprincipled men, is what it amounted to. And what he thought about was not what was right, but what would make Tiberius happy. That's what he thought about. And that was his main concern. This gave him a rule, but one without any authority, or moral authority, I should say. He was a ruler, and he had the authority to rule, but no moral authority whatsoever. In Proverbs 14, beginning at verse 32, wise man of old wrote, "Wise, what wicked is banished in his wickedness, but the righteous has a refuge in his death. Wisdom rests in the heart of him who has understanding, but what is in the heart of fools is made known. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people." We've seen this play out time and time again in history. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And certainly that's the case with Rome. But because he never had any fear of God, he didn't have any principles. In Proverbs 15:33, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility. And again in Proverbs 18 and verse 12, before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, and before honor is humility. This man was filled with a total sense of self-importance, and consequently had no respect for God or anything to do with God whatsoever. Now, it's likely, now this is just a little bit of interesting information, it's likely that Pilate had some military experience. As a ruler, he must be a man that was ranked in equestrians, and a man of military experience, according to ISBE. But this taught him discipline and respect for authority. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, Paul wrote to Timothy, "The things you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You therefore must endure hardship," listen now, "as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." There's something to be learned from being a soldier. And certainly Pilate understood what being a soldier was. Now, how were the Roman centurions described in the pages of inspiration? Well, look at Matthew chapter 8 with me and verse 9. Chapter 8 and verse 9. This is a centurion who came to Jesus with a request. He said, "I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes. To another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." A centurion was able to order men around. But this man recognized that Jesus had what? Authority. He said, I am nothing like you, but I can order men around and they do what I tell them to do. And so I know that whatever you say, it'll be done. Jesus said, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. But we're told that Pilate is a man who tried to intimidate with his position, but didn't have any consistency in his conduct. This, of course, we see in his confrontation with Jesus. Jesus, of course, used the wrath of Pilate as an example in Luke chapter 13 and verse 1. You remember reading about over there where the Galilean's blood had been mingled with the sacrifices? And look who was credited with doing that. Pilate. Pilate was doing it. Now, unlike maybe what direction some of you think we're going to go, what I want to do is I want us to look at the trial of Pilate. The trial of Pilate. Because in reality, God was putting Pilate on trial. Yeah. God allowed men to face times of difficulty where their real character is revealed. We see this back clear in Genesis 22. We're told here that it came to pass after these things, Abraham tested God. Or God tested Abraham. I'll get that right. God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. In Job chapter 23, remember that he knows the way I take. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot has held fast to his steps. I have kept his way and not turned aside. I have not departed from the commandment of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. All these Job, Abraham, and on and on we could go into a great big list of men who were put to the test, and that test revealed their true character. God would be fair with Pilate, so he would clearly see what the truth was when he was brought to trial. But look at Pilate. Pilate saw the hypocrisy of the Jewish leaders. In Mark 14, down to verse 61, but he kept silent and answered nothing. Again, the high priest asked, saying to him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And Jesus said, I am. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming with the clouds of the heaven. And the high priest tore his clothes. And he said, what further need do we have of witness? The Jews were convinced, no doubt about it, they were convinced that this was a hypocrite. And they, in fact, condemned Jesus to death for blasphemy. Now, did they mention that to Pilate? No, I don't think they did they? No, they didn't. What they wanted was they wanted Pilate to rubber stamp their decision. They couldn't put him to death themselves. In John chapter 18, beginning verse 28, they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. And it was early morning. They themselves did not go into the praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Pilate then went out to them, and he said, what accusation do you bring against this man? They answered and said, if he were not an evildoer, would we not have delivered him up to you? And Pilate said, you take him and judge him according to your law. Therefore Jesus said, it is not lawful. They said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. They didn't tell him what the accusation was. They just wanted him to give them the approval to put him to death. But when Pilate pressed them, they made up some accusations that would appeal to Pilate. The whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, saying he himself is Christ, a king." Like religious leaders today, they would use any methods possible to accomplish their task of killing Christ. And Pilate could see through it. Pilate could see through it. Pilate, in fact, had no respect for these Jews. Pilate saw Jesus being brought to him under severe pressure. The wisdom and the strength of our Lord was shown when it says he did not speak. Pilate said to him, "Are you king of the Jews?" And he answered and said, "It's as you say." And the chief priests accused him of many things, but he answered them nothing. Then Pilate asked him again, saying, "Do you answer nothing? See how many things they testify against you." But Jesus still answered nothing. Now note this last bit of the verse. So that Pilate marveled. This man's being accused of everything under the sun, and he doesn't say anything. When he did speak, it was not with hatred or excitement or fear. For what good would it do? What good would it do? Jesus could see this. Could see it. In 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning with verse 20, Peter says, "What credit is it when you are beaten for your faults if you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, and you take it patiently, this is commendable before our God. For to this you were called. Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile again. And when he suffered, did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously." Strength. This strength continued even after the scourging. In John 19, the first two verses, we see that Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. Of course, he didn't do it personally. He had his soldiers do it. The soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. Looking down now to verse 7, the Jews answered, "We have a law, and according to our law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." Therefore, when Pilate heard that saying, he was even more afraid. And he went again in the praetorium, and he said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. And then Pilate said to him, "Are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and to release you?" Jesus answered, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above. Therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin." From then on, Pilate sought to release him. Remember, this is the trial of Pilate we're talking now. He sought to release him. But the Jews cried out the more, "If you let this man go, you're not a friend of Caesar. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar." Interesting little caveat. Pilate was warned by his wife. In Matthew 27:19, we're told that while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife said to him, came to him, sent to him and said, "Have nothing to do with this man, this just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him." You see, God chose to warn Pilate. He chose to warn him by means of this dream. But after hearing these claims of divinity, he knew for sure he was innocent. He was innocent. And then Jesus confronted Pilate with his own hope of rescue. And that was the truth. In John 18 and verse 36, he's asked who he is, and he says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" And when he said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all." Pilate's background taught him that there is a danger in truth. There's a danger in truth. And so this put the fear in him for sure. He states the truth, but he will not stand for it. That's the problem. Now, let's look here for a minute at the middle ground of Pilate. Three ways Pilate tried to avoid the decision. First, he sent him to Herod. We read about it in Luke chapter 23 where Pilate heard that he was a man of Galilee and the Galileans were judged by Herod, and he sent him over to him. Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him and arrayed him in gorgeous robe, sent him back to Pilate. He had hoped maybe this decision could be made by somebody else, but it didn't work. Then he offered the people Barabbas. After the question of what is truth and the statement that he found no fault in him at all, he said, "But you have a custom that I should release someone to you at Passover. Do you therefore want me to release the king of the Jews?" And they cried again, saying, "Not this man, but Barabbas." And Barabbas was a robber. You see, Pilate was between a rock and a hard place. He no more wanted to release this robber than anything, but he gave them the choice. What'd they choose? The robber. The robber. Pilate wanted the crowd to make the decision for him. And instead, the decision became more difficult. More difficult. In Matthew 27, again, verse 16. At that time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. They gathered together and Pilate said, "Whom do you want me to release?" And he knew this. Now look, "whom you want me to release?" Because he knew they had handed him over because of envy. He knew this. And while he was sitting at the judgment seat, of course, his wife came and said, "Don't have anything to do with this." And then in verse 20, the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask for Barabbas and destroy Jesus. Pilate tried to arouse some kind of sympathy in the people. And in John 19, in verse 1, Pilate had scourged him, we know, and taken him, put a purple robe, and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." Pilate went out and said, "Behold, I'm in bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him." And Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." What about the solution to Pilate? Well, Pilate had two goals. To release Jesus, for sure, and he wanted to please the people. He decided that the decision wasn't his to make, because the people kept crying out all the more. They wanted Jesus crucified. And whenever he put the blame on them and said, "Okay, here's the story. I'm going to wash my hands of this matter and leave it all on you." Verse 24 through 26. "I'm going to wash my hands and I just leave this all on you. I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it." And listen to what the people said. Listen to this. "His blood be on us and on our children." You know, whenever you put a decision that affects you in the hands of someone else, you better be prepared. You better be prepared. It's not going to turn out well. But that's what the people did. Then he released Barabbas to them, and when they had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. Now, get over here. There we are. Let's look at God's ruling on the trial of Pilate. Pilate wanted clean hands. Did he have them? Just because he ceremoniously washed his hands, did he have clean hands? God recognized that Pilate was under pressure. In Acts 13, verse 28, "And though they found no cause for death in him, they asked Pilate that he should be put to death." God understood that Pilate was under pressure to do this. He also recognized that Pilate did not arrest Jesus, and he is not the one responsible for causing this situation. God also knew that Pilate heard a remarkable confession. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, 13, Paul told Timothy, "I urge you in the sight of God, who gives life to all things, and before Jesus Christ, who witnessed the good confession before Pontius Pilate." But let's get right down to it. The final verdict was guilty. God clearly shows that Pilate's hands were truly unwashed. In Acts 4 and verse 27, "For truly, against your servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate with the Gentiles and the people of Israel were gathered together." In many ways, Pilate was just like the religious leaders that he despised, and he was substituting form for substance. In Matthew 23, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites! Why, you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith." And these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. But you know, we didn't say all of this today to just leave it at this with Pilate. We, of course, are concerned about our own trial. How will you do at your trial? Many look at consequences and try to find other ways to satisfy the problem. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 12, as many as desire to make a good showing in the flesh, these will compel you to be circumcised, only that you may not suffer persecution for Christ. They're looking for other solutions. Now, let's go back and think about Pilate for a minute. What if Pilate would have stood for the truth? What if he would have stood for the truth? What if he didn't bend to the Jewish leaders? On the judgment day, you're not going to have anybody to stand behind. Pilate made his decision, and Pilate paid the price. But on the judgment day, you're not going to have anybody to stand behind and say, well, it's so-and-so's fault. It's so-and-so's fault. I washed my hands up. Do you think you did? Do you think you really did? Now, are you really looking for the middle ground, or are you looking for the truth? Pilate was trying to find something that would constitute a middle ground in order to get a good solution for his problem. Didn't have it. Didn't have it. Whenever you're gone from this earth, and this is important to think about because we're all going to leave someday. What will you be known for? Will people say, well, whenever he was here, he just kind of got along with everybody. Got along with everybody. He never really took a stand one way or the other, but that was really nice. He got along with everybody. Is that what people are going to say? The fact of the matter is, God will remember those who stand for Him. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, Paul told Timothy, "Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved His appearing." That's what we're interested in. Not any half-hearted hand washing or trying to put the blame on someone else. We have to stand for the truth, no matter what the consequences are.